Conservatives had their biggest convention over the weekend. CPAC, as it is known, had its share of animosity and anger. Who's surprised by that? No one, right? First, they were angry at Democrats and liberals. But Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels expressed it in a very ironic way.
Our opponents are better at nastiness than we will ever be. It comes naturally.
Even the audience laughed at that. The opponents, the liberals, the guys who are interested in peace, the vegans, among many, many others, they're nastier than the Republicans. What a joke. Now let's listen to what conservative blogger and activist Andrew Breitbart had to say about liberals. Let's see who's nasty.
The people that I've confronted at these things to a person are monsters. They're hate-filled and they're racist. They're not American, I'm sorry, they're animals.
They're animals, they're monsters, they're not Americans. No, no, but the liberals are hate-filled and the liberals are racist. Who are these guys kidding, man? By the way, that guy looked like he was on a bender. Now let's come back to the ironic Mr. Daniels. Now listen to what he says at the end here.
The public is increasingly disgusted with a steady diet of defamation and prepared to reward those who refrain from it. It would help if they liked us just a bit.
Ah, you see that? He knows that they're the ones that are nasty, and he tells the audience, you know, don't be nasty. It might help if voters actually liked us. Well, interesting honesty there. But people weren't just yelling at the Democrats. Conservatives started turning on each other, which is always fun. Pamela Geller, one of the most vocal opponents of building a mosque at Ground Zero, now thinks the big bad Muslims have infiltrated CPAC.
This is the problem with CPAC, that it's corrupted and it's been compromised by Muslim Brotherhood.
Muslims are in the building! And thank you, that's what I was waiting for. And the CPAC crowd was also divided on substantive issues as well. And of course, they did not voice their disagreements politely. Some of them even turned on their one-time hero, Dick Cheney, booing him when he came out to give Rumsfeld the Defender of the Constitution Award.
All right, sit down and shut up.
All right, now we're having fun. That's some serious disagreement. That's Republicans yelling war criminal at Dick Cheney and him telling them to shut up. Sounds like it was a load of fun. Now, Ron Paul supporters also took out their anger on an interesting guy, Donald Trump.
By the way, Ron Paul cannot get elected. I'm sorry to tell you.
That was some serious booing. Ron Paul's opponents let their voices be heard as well. When the straw poll results were announced, declaring Paul the winner, boos from the anti-Paul crowd were mixed in with the cheers. Look, when you got a room full of angry people, it's only a matter of time before they get angry at each other. But I actually think this is a good thing for the Republican Party. Why? Because agree or disagree with their position, the Ron Paul people are genuine, and they're asking an important question. What does it mean to be a conservative? Now, joining me is Matt Welch, editor-in-chief of the libertarian magazine Reason, to talk about that and what happened at CPAC. So, first, how big is the Ron Paul faction? Is it, you know, I know he won the straw poll and he got 30% of the vote, but is it 30% and that's it? Or are there others who are sympathetic to it? Is it likely to become a majority at some point?
Every time we try to assess or limit the impact of Ron Paul, he kind of exceeds expectations, and that includes those of us who share, you know, a good swath of his politics. You know, for the entire year of 2007 on the Republican side, the favorite, consensus favorite in the Republican presidential campaign was Rudolph Giuliani, and Ron Paul didn't even show up on the radar screen, yet he ended up finishing in fourth place back then. Since then, his message has only gotten stronger or more purchase out there in the culture. He's chair of the subcommittee that's looking into the Federal Reserve, for crying out loud. People are wanting to audit the Fed on the left and the right. So I don't know if it's majoritarian at this point. I don't think anyone on the Republican side of the aisle is anywhere close to a plurality or a majority of the voters. It's a real contested field right now, and libertarians are in the mix, in the middle of it all, duking it out and trying to reorient the party towards limiting the size of government, which is what Republicans were supposed to be about, but totally forgot for more than a decade.
So that's really interesting, right? And of course, as I said, Ron Paul's at about 30%. Sarah Palin didn't even, I think she came in ninth at 3%. But is the conservative concern here, or maybe it's not, that's why I'm asking you, because you're involved in this, is the concern that the rest of the Republicans are just doing the bidding of the lobbyists and the corporate guys, et cetera, and they're not being real conservatives? Is that really taking hold in the Republican Party or not yet?
Beginning with George W. Bush and John McCain back in the late 90s, they explicitly repudiated or even refudiated libertarianism by name. They thought that was mean and nasty wing of republicanism. And they also found, to their benefit personally, that if they were going to do business with various interest groups, it would be helpful to be more of big government conservatism, to use a David Brooks phrase. That was successful in the short term, but it went against a sizable minority, at least, or strain, within American politics. And I think all of the juice in American politics from the grassroots since about the fall of 2008 has been with people who were against the Wall Street bailout, against bailout economics perpetually. And so that enthusiasm has been looking for a place to go. And it's astonishing to me that the Republican Party is still very slow to realize that and capitalize that on a real way. I mean,
they're not slow. What it is, Matt, is that they get paid by the lobbyists. So they get it. They're just not interested. They're like, wait, do you pay my paycheck? No, you don't. The lobbyists do. So that's why they would go in that direction. But look, I got issues with Ron Paul, too, though. I want to run you a clip of him at CPAC and then get your reaction. Let's watch. Sure.
What if I could offer you and say, look, we're not doing such a good job in government these days. We make promises and we don't know about the future. But would you consider opting out of the whole system under one condition? You pay 10% of your income, but you take care of yourself. Don't ask the government for anything.
Matt, that plays well, but you're not going to ask the government for cops when you're getting mugged? You're not going to ask the government for roads you can drive on? Come on.
Does that cost more than 10% of our money? I mean, look, Ron Paul offers the most sort of radical version of libertarianism or limited government that's out there, and it is not politically palatable, and he knows that. He's actually using this whole process as a way to sort of startle people out of their complacency and maybe get to a point where we start reconsidering, like, hey, why don't we unilaterally cut agriculture subsidies or ethanol subsidies or any number of these sort of useless and harmful programs that we have that's much more modest in scale and scope than what he's talking about. But he's reminding people and Republicans and Democrats alike, because he gets a lot of support from the left side of the aisle, that there is an untapped constituency of people who are not in favor of perpetual war, of spending half of the world's money on defense and all of these kinds of apparitions of modern conservatism. He's trying to shock their sensibilities, and in that, he's building an audience that exceeds everyone's expectations.
Right, Matt, and that's why I'm excited, honestly, because, look, as much as I might disagree with, as you even accurately described, his radical ideology sometimes, look, the guy can achieve real bipartisanship. They did on auditing the Fed. When you talk about cutting the useless waste in spending, whether it's ethanol subsidies or whether it's defense, we totally agree. So it's a fascinating phenomenon, and Matt, thanks for coming on tonight to talk about it.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right.